Okay, I know it's been a couple of weeks, but I really would like to finish off Ecclesiastes. In case I'm repetitious, I go into something I've gone through before, just let me know. But I do want to give a brief summary of what we've done until now. The main idea of the most important idea of Ecclesiastes, and this is really an idea of the entire Torah, and that is that, as we explained, the people misunderstand Ecclesiastes. They think he's asking questions against the religion, which he's not. He makes it quite clear, and if you know Hebrew, you will see that linguistically it is 100% correct that he endorses every one of the fundamental principles of the Torah, namely that the person that is just, God rewards, and that there is an afterlife. He has that in two places. He makes it very clear that he believes in these things, and he certainly, the Torah, believes in the Torah and the commandments, and this is interspersed throughout Ecclesiastes. To deny this is just simply to give a simplistic kind of interpretation, which falls in with the average person's way of thinking, which is not what King Solomon is all about. So if you look carefully at the verses, you'll see that he endorses the most fundamental principle. He doubts about it because he was he received the tradition, and it was only a few hundred years from Sinai, at the time of King Solomon, and he knew the not that the length of time makes any difference, but I'm just mentioning that. The fact is that he didn't have any questions about the facts of the religion, but the thing, and this is the point that most people do not understand, and that is in Torah, just the word of God is not enough. And I know that sounds like a non-religious statement, but that's really what Torah is all about. For Torah, the word of God itself is not enough. What do I mean by that? I mean that in Torah, the Torah engages in man, the highest element of man, that is his mind. And even if God says something, but if man cannot understand it, it does not have much value for him. This we see if you look through the five books of Moses. For instance, when Abraham confronts God and asks God, he says, how can you do such a thing? How can you be unjust? And use an expression, Chalila l'cha, like it means like in our language, in our vernacular, like, heaven forbid, how can this be that you will destroy these cities? He had to understand God's justice. It wasn't good enough for him to say, well, God says it's just. Well, what's the problem? No, but if I don't understand it, and if I have a problem, then there's no value in it to me. It's fine to know that God is right, but what has it helped me? It only helps me if I understand it, if my mind comprehends it, and my life is a life of understanding, then I have a life as a human being. But just to say, well, God said it's right and it's right, that's not what Torah is all about. And that's why Moses also challenged God when he says to God, and if you don't do this, then wipe me out of the book that you've written. Don't put my name there. Which means when man speaks to God, it must be in his own framework, with his own understanding. And if there's no understanding, there's no value. That's where Torah differs from all man-made religions. Man-made religions just want one thing. They want salvation. They want the hereafter, they want the eternal, and they want to appease God, and that's basically the fundamental principle of idolatry, is to propitiate the gods. And that's it. Just they want a guarantee for that. That's not what Torah is all about. Torah is a religion of mind, of understanding, and if you don't have any understanding, then there's no value in your life. And this is the premise with which King Solomon, his whole book is based upon this premise. And because at the end of the book he says, keep all the mitzvahs and that's it. So he knew the mitzvahs were correct. So what does he have to have the whole book for? Okay. And this was the problem that I raised when I first started, which I would like to answer today. You know, why does he in the end say, well, the end of all things is that everything has been heard, and okay, now just keep God's commandments. But that would seem to be a contradiction to the whole book, because now we're saying the whole purpose of the book is that man cannot live with that idea alone. Even if he knows that God tells him to do X, Y, Z, but just doing that is not going to give him a life of a human being, because your life of a human being must be based upon your mind and your knowledge. That is man. The essence of man, which is the Tzelem Elokim, the divine element of man, all the scholars of our Torah say it means man's intellect, his knowledge, his understanding. That's what differentiates man from the animal kingdom. And that's what's unique in man, and that is not a product of any evolutionary process, but that is something which God directly implanted in man. The human soul is the ability to understand, to comprehend, to gain knowledge of everything that is around him. Now, that's why, but Solomon's premise, and he uses this premise when he approaches every lifestyle. And that's why King Solomon is not afraid to approach lifestyles that have nothing to do with the lifestyle that the Torah prescribes. For instance, some of the lifestyles, and I mentioned this, if you really look through the book carefully, agree it's a difficult book, because it's written by the wisest of men, King Solomon, and of course if a wise person writes something, it's difficult to decipher. It takes much time to learn and to study. We're fortunate we had a lot of the scholars of the Torah that had the tradition of the ideas carried down from the time of King Solomon. So we do have some kind of a clue and some kind of an insight. We're fortunate with that. But still, it's a very, very difficult project to really understand everything he's saying. It's also written in a way, the way, as King Solomon himself says in Proverbs, the way the wise write, they always conceal the ideas. You have to really look carefully to pull them out. But they are there. Now, the different lifestyles that he goes through every conceivable lifestyle that a human being can have or could want. He goes through the lifestyle of the empire builder, that the lifestyle of the successful, accomplished individual. He shows that that has no basis in reality. He shows that the lifestyle of the playboy has no basis. That leads to unhappiness. He even has the religious lifestyle, and he shows how frustrating that is. And he has that on two counts. He has the religious lifestyle in terms of a person that would like to be like a monk, you know, just live an ascetic existence with a religious kind of feeling, that kind of a lifestyle, and he shows that that's frustrating for man, that man cannot be happy in such a life. And he also shows the person that lives with the idea that he's going to get paid back in the afterlife. That kind of a lifestyle is also a frustrating, unhappy lifestyle, and if it's frustrating and unhappy, it cannot be correct. That, by the way, is the premise of his book. Namely, that there must be a lifestyle for men that is satisfying as well as true. You see, that's to place it succeed. That's what he's saying. It's got to be true, and it has to be satisfying. You cannot, if you're going to show me a lifestyle, even if you would show me a lifestyle that would be satisfying, not true, King Solomon would say, then that's not satisfying. Because man is essentially a mind, and if he knows that this is not true and not real, that itself would prevent him from enjoying it. Okay, so it must be two things. Then he goes through the lifestyle of the thinker, the great philosopher, the thinker, the college professor, the individual who is a man of knowledge. Is that lifestyle satisfying? And he breaks that one down as well. And he shows that that kind of a lifestyle, that people are attracted to that kind of a lifestyle because they feel that this person has some kind of a superiority and he's really an individual that is above all because he's in the world of knowledge. But then when he dies, just like an animal, then or like a fool, or like an animal, then that shatters that illusion as well. And he shows you how life, the life that we have, is basically an illusion-shattering life. And every kind of lifestyle that you're attracted to, if you were really honest, you would see that there's a natural breakdown to that kind of a thing. And man finds himself in a world where he is totally insecure, where he looks for a certain kind of a lifestyle to give him a security and a feeling that he has some kind of permanence or some kind of value. But the truth of the matter is there is no lifestyle out there like that. He also has the romantic lifestyle, the lifestyle of the lover. He has that too. He has every conceivable type of life that a person could be attracted to, and he shows that any one of those lives does not hold up if you're looking for a life of happiness for man, and the end of all those lifestyles is simply frustration and unhappiness. Okay. Now, the important thing to remember is that you have to understand that King Solomon is making a big statement here. But you ask, of course, well, what do you mean? We see some people say they're happy. So King Solomon would say that people say a lot of things, but we really cannot accept what they say. They say things for reasons. They say things because they want other people to think that they are true, essentially. They say things because they themselves want to believe those things are true. So King Solomon would never take as evidence a statement that a person, well, I'm a happy truck driver. You know, I mean, he doesn't believe what the person says. He has to analyze it logically. He doesn't accept anecdotal testimony. Okay, that's an important point. By the way, Plato, Socrates said the exact same thing. He also, when he's discussing life, he mentions that you cannot believe a person who claims that he's happy or unhappy because there are different motivations that people have for making these statements. And oftentimes, they don't know themselves whether they're happy or unhappy, and it's simply a lie, but they want to fool themselves. So the only thing we could do in testing life is to use logic and reason, and that's exactly what it does. Rigorously goes through every type of lifestyle and shows why each one fails to give man an adequate existence, and you come to the conclusion that vanity of vanities, emptiness of emptiness, which means that this human existence really is a worthless kind of existence, unhappy, and the only thing, see, the thing is, so you'll ask me if that is the case, well, how come most people don't feel that way? The answer is that most people's lives are really, the way most people live is not the way that King Solomon would consider a valid kind of existence. See, most people's lives are like a bob in the ocean. They go up, they go down. The wave comes, they're under, then they're up. And if you look carefully to people, and today with the media, that's one good thing about the media. You have exposed a lot of different people in different lifestyles, and you'll see people that you would think would be very happy. And you'll see when they talk about their depressions and their unhappiness. And they say, yeah, but then I get back on my day. You know, the way they handle life. And the strangest thing about it, is that when you look at some people that are in total misery, you see they look just as happy sometimes as people you'd think would be on top of the world. I mean, this fellow, Chris, the one who played Superman, just got paralyzed from the first vertebrae down. I mean, they interviewed him, and you see the way he talks about life. You wonder, well, he doesn't seem that much worse off than he was when he had all his faculties. So and you look at that, and you say, well, boy, I should be walking around all day happy. The fact that I'm not crippled, I'm not in his condition. And then you see people who have what you would think is everything, and yet you find that they're on drugs and drinking, and they simply can't make it through life. But the answer is, and that's exactly what King Solomon is getting at, the answer is that you cannot, that's why you cannot trust what people say about their lives. They disguise, they hide, they don't want to admit to different things. The only way we can analyze life is in a logical way. And most people's lives get through life. The question is, of course, King Solomon shows that every single lifestyle fails. So that being the case, they say, well, why isn't everybody walking around in depression? Okay, so you'll tell me that's partially true. I forgot what the rates are. 50% of people are in depression, whatever it is. But experience depression, that may be true. But the fact is that most people don't live with rationality. And that's why you might say, in a sense, that's where that statement, ignorance is bliss, comes from. Because most people go by the moment, as I mentioned before, like a bob in the ocean. You know, they're up and then they're down. But when they're down, you see, they never take into consideration the entire picture of their life. They just go through each stage in a very myopic, nearsighted way. So that kind of saves them. And it, because what happens is when they're in depression, they're very depressed, but then it passes over, and then they think, oh, now everything's going to be great. So they go into this elation. So they go from elation to depression, depression to elation. And they just make it through their 70 or 80 years that way. Okay? Now, King Solomon, of course, would not be happy with such a kind of a thing. I mean, most would say, you know, that's why if you listen to the music, I mean, the culture of the society always contains certain ideas. And if you're an intelligent person, you can really use it in a way that you can gain knowledge. I mean, according to Torah philosophy, See, culture, we don't have any culture in Torah. Culture is not a value, because culture is really the philosophy of the masses. That's why, strictly speaking, and you know, it may sound a bit shocking, but strictly speaking, according to Torah, one is not permitted to read literature, and the rabbis deduce it from the verse in Leviticus, where it says, "You shall not turn to the strange gods, the Elilim." So the Talmud says, "Well, why the word turn?" So the Talmud says that it means to say you shouldn't turn. See, the strange gods are something that means a man-made illusions that are projected onto reality. They're not real, and the Torah is against anything that's not real. So the Talmud says it means don't turn towards anything that's man-made and is not real, which means literature. That's why literature really is from a strict, I know it sounds wild, but from a strict sense, literature is prohibited based upon that verse. Why? Because in literature, what you have a situation where you take average people and you present them as heroes. Now, those heroes are not real heroes. They're gripping emotionally, but in reality, they aren't heroes. Yet when you read them, or a movie, for instance, would be the same thing as literature. There's no difference. How many times people go to a movie and they see a gangster being successful and then they feel upset when he gets caught? Now, that means that this person has caught them emotionally and they think he's a hero. And when Al Capone finally gets caught, they're upset because he became the hero. So you see, a person can be attracted to a certain heroic figure either through literature or through a movie or through one of the cultural media, and that, the Torah says, is bad because this man isn't a hero. If you look at his life objectively, you see this man is a killer, a ruthless killer. But he could become your hero for a moment. And the Torah considers that to be wrong. That's why literature, which is man-made and where you have writers that are not really in line with the Torah philosophy, they set up these heroes, and you're emotionally caught up when you read these books. You're caught up and you identify with these figures. You understand, when you read literature, it has no value unless you can identify with the figures. There's no psychological value. Now, that identification, the Torah says, is bad because you're identifying now with these people that are not really heroes, but your emotions are getting caught up. So now you're presenting for yourself a way of life which is false, but emotionally gripping. That's the Torah's worst danger. That's the whole idea of idolatry. So that's why the rabbis say that literature is prohibited. But the Torah, in its divine wisdom, has one kind of an exception to that. And that is that if you study it for the sake of knowledge, then it's permissible. In other words, the same literature that you read, if you take a piece of Shakespeare and you analyze it and you show why it is correct, why his ideas are false, and what is attractive about the idea, so then this is a good thing, and this is something the Torah does endorse. So that's why when my students ask me, are you allowed to watch a movie, I say it depends. If you're going to just allow your emotions to take over and watch the movie, then it certainly is prohibited because you're just indulging in a false world because it's gripping emotionally, and that's exactly the opposite of the whole Torah philosophy. But if you study it and you understand it and you make it a source of knowledge and understanding, then it is permissible because the Torah says that you're not allowed to study the ways of the idolaters, but the Torah says you shall not learn to do as the idolaters do. So the rabbis say that's an important, those two words are very important. You shall not learn to do as they do. But you can learn their ways in order to understand what they do and understand the human mind. That is something which will put you on the right road and which will give you insight and knowledge, which is really the end of the end product of the entire Torah. So there again, you have an important fundamental principle of Torah philosophy. Now, getting back to the point, and so that's why I mentioned that we today have access. You know, people always put down the television, and they put down today's literature. I'm not so quick to put it down. It depends. Unfortunately, the way it is used commonly, it is a bad thing because what you're doing is you're getting people into nonsensical kinds of lifestyles, and man is groping for some kind of a way to live, but doesn't have the right way, and people get caught up in these incorrect lifestyles. But as a corrupted value system, basically. But you're an intelligent individual, you could use all the knowledge of the media and see what is correct and what is incorrect, and then it certainly is permissible, because now it's permissible, it's a part of life and a part of understanding, a part of knowledge. So today you have access to a lot of information that they didn't have in the past, and in a way it's good, in a way it's bad. It depends on the perceiver. You know, in Torah, the concept of the perceiver is the most important thing. It's not the source, it's the perceiver that makes the difference. As Rabbi Soloveitchik mentioned, it's the same God, but the prophets, the levels of prophecy are different. Moses was the highest prophet, qualitatively differentiated. Elijah was the greatest of the succeeding prophets, but the reason why each one differs is not because of the source. The source is always the same. The source is God. It's the perceiver that makes the difference, the level of the perceiver. So here again, and the question is the media good, modern media good, bad, or otherwise? It's the perceiver. That's what makes the difference. If it's a Torah personality analyzing life, then it's great. But if it's a person that's taken in by the emotions of the moment that these media present, then of course it's total destruction. So back to the Kohelet, to the Ecclesiastes, what he's saying is that most people's lives, the way they make it through life, they only make it through life because of the fact that they don't think about their whole life. All they do is they feel day to day. Today they feel good, oh, life is great. Tomorrow they're depressed, ah, life is tragic. But they never stop to think. In a way, that saves them, because what Ecclesiastes is saying is if they did stop and think and look at one whole picture, they would get a very bad picture, and they would see that their life is really not worth living. And that could lead to total depression. Most people are not capable of such a kind of depression. You see, the Torah differentiates between the emotions and the mind. There's a emotional depression, and then there's an intellectual depression. As a matter of fact, that's mentioned in Ecclesiastes, where he says that it's better to go to the house of mourning than to the house of joyousness. He says, because the heart of the wise man is always in the house of mourning, which means to say, the wise man who is looking for a whole picture. You see, the difference, and this is something that Maimonides mentions in one of his writings, that he was, when he was serving the Sultan, so he used to give him, he felt that as a physician, it's not just important to be the physical physician of the Sultan, but he believed that health, physical health, is very dependent upon the mental state. So he used to try to give the Sultan certain ideas of philosophy, philosophical ideas, to make him happier. I don't know how successful it was in that score. But one of the things he tells us, the real life of a person should not have ups and downs. And this is one of the things he mentioned. A person's life should not have ups and downs. Because a wise man's life is always on an even keel, he calls it. An even keel, he says. If a good thing happens, he's not too happy. Doesn't really change him too much. If a bad thing happens, also, he doesn't change much. He basically rides an even keel. And the reason is because his happiness is not associated with the events of the moment as the ordinary person, but his happiness is dependent upon the total picture. And if a person has in his mind the total picture, he is aware of all the possible ups and downs. That's all factored into the case. He doesn't go up and down like a bob in the ocean with every event. He has an even keel, okay? And that's what the Ecclesiastes, that's what King Solomon is looking for. Because King Solomon maintains that even, of course, I mean, I know it must be something you're thinking of in the back of your mind to say, well, look, maybe we can enjoy those moments of elation. Why should we lose that? I mean, most people don't want to give up any kind of pleasure. And you say, well, look, in the life of the average person, there are moments when he has a tremendous high, and you're asking me to give up these highs, and you're saying that I should be on an even keel. Person doesn't like to give up anything. Even if I would say, well, those moments of the highs are very few and it's not worth it. But still, a person is very attracted to pleasure and to enjoyment, and therefore it's very hard for them to give up even something which is momentary. They think, wow, that's great, because they're attracted like a magnet to that moment. That's the problem, really, of the fool, and that's the difference between the fool and the philosopher. The fool is fixed on the moment. All he can think about is that one moment. He can work for 20 years to get himself that house or that car, and the enjoyment is very momentary. He'll never think, well, look, it was worth all that effort. So So he's fixated to the moment. But the truth of the matter is that King Solomon would argue that even that moment is not enjoyable. Why? Because a person, a human being, see, any kind of a form of existence, if you want it to be happy, happy means you must satisfy its needs. So if you want to make a chimpanzee happy, you don't put him in a fancy hotel. You have to put him in a place where his needs are satisfied, which would mean he has trees, he has fruits, he has things that he enjoys, okay? But in order for the being, for the whatever it might be, whatever creature it might be, in order for it to have happiness, all the things that are a part of its nature that have needs must be satisfied, okay? Now, man is also a creature, and that's why in Torah, when we say the soul of man, we don't mean a mystical thing floating around the sky like religion. It's not some kind of mystical element. The soul of man means his essence, what he is in reality. And what King Solomon is teaching us is that man in reality, intelligence is a part of his very self. So if you block out a part of that person and you say, well, that part should be not functioning now, then you cannot really be happy. You see, that's where the world makes a mistake in their philosophy. And I often say everybody is a philosopher, whether they want to admit so or not. The fact is that a person must be a philosopher because a person does things out of volition. They must be doing it because they think that it's right to have some kind of a philosophy. Now, the average person's philosophy is, well, look, I want to have a good time tonight, I'll get drunk. Well, what does it mean you'll get drunk? It means I'll bomb out one part of my nature, which is my mind, which is... And therefore, the other part of me will be able to have enjoyment and pleasure. So the person is fooled because they haven't a pleasure experience, but they think that this pleasure experience is happiness. What King Solomon is saying is that that is not true. A pleasure experience is a pleasure experience. It's not happiness. Why? Because a pleasure experience means a part of you had satisfaction. So if you get drunk and you get rid of your mind, then you won't think anymore. You won't think about your problems. So then another part of you will be able to have enjoyment. But this can't be where the whole person is satisfied. Now, for the whole person to be satisfied, you cannot bomb his mind out because a mind is an integral part of man. That's the essence of his nature. Everything that you see, just look at a city. Where did that city come from? It didn't come from the man's instincts. It came from man's mind. So mind is an integral component of the human being, and you cannot conceive happiness if you don't have that part active and being satisfied. So that's why King Solomon says that when he analyzes the lifestyles, one of the things he says, and happiness, what does it do? Which means to say it's a momentary thing, and it's something, joyous occasion, a joyous experience, really is just a momentary thing. His mind can't really enjoy it, so a part of him can't enjoy it, and it's something temporary, so therefore, this is not the lifestyle that can give man happiness. That is the difference.
Rabbi?
Yes.